Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Tony Knopp at the bottom of the hour. Neil Coulong in a few moments. First, Eagles fans, you'll love it. In overtime, our play-by-play call of the day.
Wentz in the gun. Scott to his left. Wentz takes the snap. He's looking. He fires. Complete. Touchdown. Eagles win. Zach Ertz.
That's why, right there. That's why Doug called that timeout. Doug wanted to reset, see what they're doing, spread them out, get the football to old reliable Zach Ertz. Game over.
Eagles come from a two-touchdown deficit, and for the time being, they have saved the season.
It's accurate as to how Merrill phrased it. They were in trouble last night. The Giants, though, in the second half could do nothing with Philadelphia. The Eagles' defense played great. They bought the offense enough time. The offense was shorthanded. They were at the point where Josh McCown almost had to go in the game as a wide receiver. Not as a quarterback, but as a wide receiver, because they were that far down on receivers last night. But they found a way to win. Carson Wentz got hot. Good. Miles Sanders played well. Good. Zach Ertz was terrific. Good. Defense held them in the second half and bought the offense enough time to come back and win it. They are now tied with Dallas at 6-7 with three games to play. And they still have to play the Cowboys. And when they do play the Cowboys this time, it will be in Philadelphia. Let's go to Tony in Shamokin Dam. Tony, welcome back to the show. It is always a pleasure, my friend. Great to hear you.
Well, no offense to Tony in Shamokin Dam. We've got the one and only Tony Knopp.
Oh, he's with us live now.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, wow. Awesome. Tony. First of all, let's start with this. What an absolute! It wasn't just an absolute pleasure to see you in person here October 19th, but what a great pleasure to meet your wife, who's just a wonderful, wonderful person.
Yeah, she's. I got lucky with that one. I just locked it up and kept it as long as I put a ring on it before she knew any better.
You and I married way above ourselves, my man. Way above.
That was. I mean, I'm not saying it because of, you know, we're on Penn State Radio, but I've said for years that I think the best lab event is the Red River game, the Oklahoma-Texas mm-hmm. game. But the Whiteout has it beat. I mean, the Whiteout is the best college experience I've been to, and I've been to a lot of them. That was one great experience that I hopefully will be seeing next year when you guys host Ohio State. I'm assuming that will be the game.
Yeah, that'll be the game. I mean, it hasn't been announced, but one can make the assumption off the bat. Okay. Let's get into the heart and soul of this and into the business of it. The college football playoff is big business, as you and I know.
Oh, yeah.
And so is the New Year's Six. Now, let's not discount the New Year's Six. There's a lot of money in each of these games that then conferences pool. Would it be safe to say that we won't see any change in this format until the contract is up?
I don't think. There's no way you see a change until the contract's up. I think you're eventually going to get to a point where you have a larger playoff because of how much money and influx in that money there is nationally on the Final Four front, right? The interesting thing about the bowl situation, especially the New Year's Six, is national dollars are strong, but the actual events are generally driven by local dollars, local sponsorship, local tie-in. And it's so healthy that when you get the more national games with the more national ratings, which is what they've seen with some of the CFP games. They still haven't figured out when to play the CFP games, but, you know, we were just talking a second ago about, you know, business is the reason Wisconsin comes to the Rose Bowl, because Wisconsin travels so well, maybe better mm-hmm. than anybody else. I think Penn State's right there with them, but I think that's the reason for that decision. And until that contract gets renewed. There's just too many things up in the air. You know, the Pac-12 doesn't have true ownership right now. They're talking about conference realignment again in the ACC. It's until they let those waters settle out, I don't think we're going to see any change. But I think right before the contract expires, we're going to see just as much realignment as we saw last time when we saw Rutgers and Maryland join the Big Ten, and we saw the Big I always mess it up. When we saw the Big 12, the Big 8 basically become the Big 12, become the Big
right.
12, but it's not really 12. And,
right.
You know,
right.
Nebraska,
I mean, again,
over,
don't
and Colorado
do,
and Utah during the Pac-12. Those musical chairs will happen again 1 year prior.
That beautiful child of yours, do not teach that beautiful child of you through sports. Dallas is Dallas is in the NFC East. The Big 12 has 10 teams. The Big 10 has 14. Do not teach your child through sports.
It's crazy. And just where they are is just insanity to me. But
I know.
I think we're going to see more of that, and there's going to be the argument at the Super Conference. I mean, the reality is the unfortunate scenario you're going to run into is if you look, and you and I talk about this a lot because I know you're well-versed on it, if you look at what's happened with the English Premier League and with the Champions League, right, yeah. Fair and parity went away a long time ago to the altar of commerce. Where when you look at, so for those who don't follow international soccer, the biggest clubs in the world all play in their own league, which would be kind of like a conference here, and then they take a certain amount from each league and put them into the super tournament at the end of the year. So there's already a model for this where, like, the English Premier League gets four teams where, you know, certain other leagues only get two. There's going to be a lot of negotiation on that end where you're going to have the SEC saying, well, we get two. Forget the 18 playoff. We need two guaranteed right. admissions. So it's going to be ugly.
Yeah, and that's what, the Champions League?
Yeah, the Champions League.
Essentially, yeah. So, I mean, that's what might happen here. Now, here's another.
I think it's what's absolutely going to happen here. Because, look, some of these teams, if you look at the numbers behind it, some of these conferences just can't compete money-wise. I mean, even if, right. like, people are saying, okay, Clemson, right? So Clemson's defending national championship. They're running a mega program. They spend half as much money on football as Alabama. Half.
Right.
Not 80%, not 90%, 50%.
Well, here's the other part, too. And this is the part that's never talked about, but you and I know that this will be a key part to this. It is called the Grant of Rights. The Grant of Rights, which really was brought to the forefront by the Big 12, where essentially you sign your media rights away to the conference. Everybody has that except for the SEC. Nobody has mm-hmm. it in the SEC. All right? But the Big 12, for example, I think the Pac-12 too, runs out in 2025, I believe. I
Pac-12,
think that
2024. Yeah.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
2024. Okay, I was close. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, Tony, that's the
first.
Line.
I think they're first. Yeah. That's why. I think they're the first ones up with a grant of rights.
Okay, that to me is the line in the sand for movement.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
absolutely.
That's where I think after that happens, you're going to see a potential free for all.
Well, it's already happened in all the other sports, right? What they're looking at is they're looking at the amount of money that the regional sports networks are making in baseball, for example. The Dodgers have their own. You know, Milwaukee has, they use Fox Sports. The Dodgers use Spectrum, Time Warner. Really, the only sport that has that centralized, quote unquote, grant of rights on a professional level is the NFL.
Right.
Right. Everybody else has the ability to build their own regional sports network, and they partner together with other teams in other leagues, right? So you have, you know, regional sports networks in Washington, D.C. that have the Capitals and the Wizards on it, which just so happen to have the same owner. But then you had Houston tried to do this. They tried to build their own regional sports network between the Rockets and the Astros, and they ended up suing each other for the next 5 years.
Right.
And it's just because they can control the rights, they can control the money, and I think you're totally right. I think once the grant of rights comes around, you're going to come to a point where the universities say, we don't want to grant this on a regional level anymore. We want to grant it on a national level. Because what a lot of universities do, for the listeners who don't know, is they know that this is becoming a national play now, that Penn State is recruiting in Los Angeles, that Ohio State is recruiting in Florida. And they also know that those sponsorships are tied to this national market. And so what they do is they use these giant conglomerates, in this case it's IMG Learfield, who have national sales teams that they outsource to. So they still have a couple of people regionally who are selling sponsorships and tents and, you know, all the different things that they do. But they also are relying on this giant national monolith that has all the data and all the ability to be able to make them a to give them a broader reach. I think that model is going to happen in college, where you have, you know, the university is starting to control their own rights, like Texas does. The University of Texas is the first one to do this with the Longhorn Network. And then you have this national appeal through these outsourced providers, whether it's Legends or Learfield, who are outselling your sponsorship. They're helping sell your premium rights. Because, you know, to really dumb it down as much as possible, Nissan, for example, is a customer of ours. And I'm sure you've seen their logo all over the place, especially in college football and college basketball. Well, they don't have the manpower to go negotiate a deal with every single university of the 104 universities they have deals with. They go to this monolith and say, hey, we want to reach about 100 teams worth. Can you put together a deal with all of these different teams that you work with? So I think the grant of rights is the last thing that stops us from moving to what's already a really mature model in almost every other sport. The only sport that bucks that trend in North America is the NFL. In England, it's the same way. In England, the English Premier League has a singular TV deal, too. But in that deal, they pay everybody differently, right? The top teams get paid more money, as opposed to like the NFL, where everybody kind of revenue shares.
Is that what Sky Sports?
Yeah. And so in that case, if you're Arsenal, you get £65 million, whereas if you're Wolverhampton, you're getting £20 million, and everybody's kind of okay with it. And
if you go that route, which I don't think they would,
that's where you'd see like Alabama, Penn State, you know, the Blue Bloods would come forward and say, no, we should be paid a lot more than Illinois, Indiana for football.
But that's the Texas model, Tony, in the Big 12.
Yep.
And that's why the Big
100%.
12 has been as fractured as it is, because I want to say Texas gets about 40%, and then the other nine get the rest.
Yeah, and they run the Longhorn Network, too. So it's they've created this silo that, you know, unfortunately, the team's not winning. Like, it's, they created this entire experience, and then the team stopped winning, and that's what happened out here. You know, Time Warner Cable created this consolidated experience with the Lakers and the Dodgers. So, if you live in Los Angeles and you don't have Time Warner Cable, and we have five or six choices, you don't get to watch the Lakers or the Dodgers. And the Dodgers have now been to two World Series and a playoffs, and now the Lakers are, you know, a top five team in basketball, and you have more than half the households who don't even have access to it. That's the frightening thing about what happens with that fractured market.
Which now brings me to the Pac-12. Pac-12 is already behind, right?
Yeah.
In fact, there are only three teams in the Pac-12 in the top 25. Oregon at 6, Utah at 11, USC at 22.
Ugh.
Okay, when it comes to the money part of it, how close is the Pac-10 to falling so far behind they may not be able to recover?
For a long time, they talked about getting this cash infusion in a private equity play, and they've actually walked away from that. The Pac-12's biggest problem is they are more reliant on one team, really, than any of the other major conferences, right? Pac-12 absolutely has to have USC football be relevant. And they absolutely have to have UCLA basketball be relevant, and they're just not. And Oregon is a fun story to watch, and Phil Knight holds them up, but they just don't deliver at the box office, and their national ratings are very poor. If you actually watch, if Oregon hosts an Auburn, right? I forget who Oregon starts with next year. I think it's Ohio State, isn't it?
I think it's Ohio State, yes.
Yeah. Oregon hosts Ohio State next year. USC is Alabama next year to start. And go look at the ratings of those games. USC will do a double rating on that game just because it's USC on this side. And so they don't have the money pouring in. So I actually think what's going to happen is you're going to see USC go independent. I just don't see any way that they're going to be able to create the amount of money. Because even today they came out with the supposedly behind-closed-door vote on the 9 a.m. games. That desperation attempt to start kicking off 9 a.m. football to try to get more national attention. And it got laughed at. I think the example that would be really prescient is USC played home and homes with Clemson in the early 2000s, and then they played Auburn in the mid-2000s, the Matt Leinart year. They went to Auburn, and then they came home and played Auburn. And at the time, Auburn, USC, and Clemson, USC had the highest-funded football program of all three of them by quite a large margin. When USC plays Alabama next year, USC is going to be about 70% the spend of what Alabama is. Right. That's how far they've fallen behind in just 10 years. If that trend continues, they're going to be non-competitive. And people like to believe that that'll never happen, right? Because we don't see that happen that often in American sports, but it happens all the time across the world. If you go look at European soccer, there are clubs that have won, you know, world championships like Nottingham Forest that are playing in the third league, which would be the equivalent of like a Penn State or a USC falling down to playing in the Mountain West.
Right. Exactly. What's interesting about the USC story is that being a private school, which they are not a state school. I think sometimes a lot of people, you and I know it, a lot of people don't seem to know that. Donation-wise, they can close a gap, but the fact that they're only at 70% of Alabama shows there's only so much private equity out there that they need the public equity from the conference, and they're not going to get it.
And they're not going to get it, and they're a bigger problem right now, and this is what's happening. USC is my alma mater, but I'm using this as an example for what's happening. We could be talking about Miami in the same breath. I mean, it's the exact same situation, what's happening at Miami, who has fallen so far behind in facilities and spend that we're just not going to see the Hurricanes come back to national prominence. It's incredibly unlikely. I think we've seen the last of Miami as a prominent national team. Is, you know, the standard ways of driving revenue become even more important to them. They need to sell out the Orange Bowl. You and I remember Miami selling out the Orange Bowl for 50-something straight games.
Exactly.
You and I remember USC selling out the Coliseum. USC's averaging 57,000 fans now. That's down 20,000 fans from 2 years ago. That's 20,000 fans across 8 dates at an average per cap, which is how they measure. If Steve goes to a game, his per cap is a dollar, is X. And what that is parking, food, merchandise, what your average spend is. The per cap is like $155. You're talking about 20,000 people across 8 games, 160,000 people at $150+ a day. That is because they're talking about buyouts, and that's over $10 million. Right. And that hole just continues to compound on itself until you see what were once blue blood programs like Tennessee, like Miami, like USC. If they stay down for too long with the way the college football landscape shifting, I don't know if they can come back.
Right. Well, here's something that's a subtle difference that a lot of people I don't think would think of. I know here at Penn State they're constantly working on upgrading facilities. Alabama, for example, and I was just down there a year ago to do basketball, so I've been there recently. They're going to put a new arena in, and they're going to put more money into Bryant-Denny Stadium, revamp it. You can do that at the Penn States, the Alabamas, and so forth, because they have land to operate with. Yep. USC does not have the land to operate because of the structure of the city around it. They can't expand what they want to do because they only have X amount of land to work with and they can't buy more.
But think about, there's a lot of those examples in the new era, right? USC just revamped the Coliseum, which they were pretty limited in what they could do because it's a historical monument, and they put suites in. But Alabama's building suites where you can't even see the game that they're going to be selling for $90,000. They're bunker suites. You can go back to your private room from your seats, which is basically what it is. But if you look at Coral Gables, no different at Miami. If you look at Tennessee, doesn't have the state funding to be able to compete. It's just interesting. And then you look at some of the programs that have these hybrid models, like a Texas A&M, for example, that are still able to compete and able to build things, even though they are receiving some grant money and they are receiving some public money. But you look at, you know, Michigan State and Michigan. Like, those are two very different schools that fund what they're doing very differently. And it's creating this new era of sports where it's very difficult for a college to be good across multiple sports, because it's almost becoming, you know, you're all, and when I say multiple sports, I mean the high money making sports, right? Obviously the champion sports are funded by the rest of them. You know, last time I saw a study, it was at most of the Division I schools, it's like 92% of the revenue is coming from football. So that's what we're talking about, and it's becoming this circumstance where once this grant of rights comes up, it's the Wild West, because it's going to be only the strong survive. These conferences aren't strong enough to hold everybody together, and really that's going to be the argument when they go back to the CFP, is say you have to empower the conference. And the only way to empower the conference is to guarantee a bid out of the conference, which is what they've done successfully with the NCAA basketball tournament. right? Now there's a reason for the conference to have this kind of power to share revenue, et cetera, because you have somebody coming out of it.
Something else that's interesting that connects college to pro is the ability to go pro. NBA, 1 year, 19 years of age. College football, 3 years after leaving high school.
Mm-hmm.
The rookie contracts open the door, unless you are franchised, to get the second contract in the fourth year. But this is going to be 2020 coming up, Tony, and the contracts are up between the Players Association of both the NBA and the NFL within the next couple of years.
Yeah.
How much does that potentially change the landscape of those thinking about going pro and when they could get their second contract?
So I'm going to bore some people, but this comes down to the analytics revolution of Moneyball in the sense that what Moneyball and the analytics revolution has done is it's fundamentally changed the value of a person and their career as they move through their career. You and I talked about this with baseball last time, because baseball have rights where you're locked up for the first 5 years as well, and then they can, you know, you can stay under the team's control. The reality is this last collective bargaining agreement was as one-sided a negotiation as it could have been in the NFL, and the players feel that way. They feel like they got taken. And in the NBA, they're not very happy with the way it went there either, but they believe they should have more of a pie. The problem the NFL has is similar to what Major League Baseball has. The analytics revolution has led to a lot shorter career span for the vast majority of the athletes that are out there.
And again,
right?
People generally focus
on the stars. Yeah. Like Drew Brees is playing until he's 40, and Tom Brady's playing until he's 40. But the average career span of an NFL player is 3.3 years now. It's lower than it's ever been. So
and
if you're locked up for the first 3 years, you have no ability to make money.
And in baseball, they don't want players over the age of 33.
Right? No, so, not at all.
And,
not
and
anymore.
This is now moving its way to the NBA and the NFL, correct?
Yeah. So it's turned into a situation where you have, you know, just gigantic people. You're basically trying to spread your money on both sides of the standard curve. You're saying, what I'm trying to do is find really, really expensive men and women who are going to be the center point of the team and the center point of the franchise. Think Strasburg for $245 million. Think Jarrett Cole for $200 million plus. Think LeBron James. Think James Harden. And then we're going to look for people on the other side of the standard curve, or trying to find somebody who's underpaid for what they offer, like a Clint Capella, like you know, a lot of the 3-and-D guys in the NBA, like how the New England Patriots approach the running back situation, right? That's how this is happening. And unfortunately, these collective bargaining agreements are signed and they're long enough that as these changes happen in the marketplace, they can't be iterated towards. And so you have, you know, a winter like last winter in baseball, and even this winter in baseball, where, you know, the rich are getting richer as far as the players go, but the rest aren't getting signed. And you see the same thing happening in basketball, where all of a sudden Carmelo Anthony is a, you know, seventh guy off the bench making the league minimum. So you just don't have the ability to iterate towards it. And the reality is, like, now you've got this real tension between amateur and professional athletics, because their prime is no longer 7 years after they come out. It's 2 years after they come out.
Right. Exactly. And that's the way they want it, because, look, the bottom line, that's why the minor league baseball proposal with the majors put forward is so absurd. Because they're aching to have as many 25 to 30 year olds as possible. How do you do that? You have to develop them. That's why you need your minor leagues.
Yeah, and the problem that baseball has is the minor league, they don't have global support for development, right? Where soccer is definitely the most developed, in that you have global support for development in almost every country. I mean, America, the United States is probably near the bottom of that. But everybody else, you know, is starting to develop their players at 13 or 14. But even the other sports, even the NBA now, has developmental leagues and the ability for people to go play overseas in legitimate leagues and then come back and be players that can make a difference.
Absolutely.
You know, the Houston Rockets have two of them, players that they brought back from Europe that have taken the team to the Western Conference Finals.
Yep.
Baseball doesn't have that. You can't go play baseball in Turkey. You can't go play baseball in Europe, right? You can't feasibly do it. I mean, they do have a league in Australia now, but that's where this minor league baseball proposal makes almost no sense to me. It just doesn't.
No, big zero. I know, as usual, we have run over on this segment.
To you and that
incredible family of yours, happy holidays from us to you, and I look forward to many, many conversations in the new year, my friend.
Yes, sir. Happy holidays to you guys. Have a great holiday. We'll talk to you guys when we're all back on the other side of daylight savings.
That sounds good. That's right.
On the other side of the, I'm sorry, it's the medium, prime medium. Wait, what's December 22nd, the shortest day of the year? What do they call it?
What is it? I guess
vernal
it's the equinox.
Vernal equinox and the, I forget the other one.
How about after New Year's?
After New Year's, that works. I'll do that.
Tony, happy holidays to you and that great family of yours. Thanks so much. You mean a lot to us. You know that.
All right, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Tony Knopp. I know we ran over on the segment, but it's just that good. We'll come back more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
I think I can.
Sunbury Motors Kia knows they can. 2019 has been a great year for Sunbury Motors Kia. They need 24 new Kia sold to reach their best sales year ever. Buy a new 2020 Kia Soul S for only $17,549. Save over $4,300. Two SUVs you have to put on your list are the Kia Sorento and Sportage. At SMC, a 2020 Kia Sportage is a steal at $24,549. Save over $5,000. And a 2019 Kia Sorento S all-wheel drive is $27,999. That's over $8,000 in discounts. Sunbury Motors needs just 24 new Kia sold to break their one-year sales record. And all Kias come with a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty.
I think I can.
This little import dealer knows they can. Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, great to have you with us on the show today. Our thanks to Tony Knopp. What a half hour that was, huh? Ricky Ronnie is taking the Old Dominion job, as almost all of you know by now. That's good for, you know, Ricky is a great guy, a hard worker. I'll tell you, northeastern Pennsylvania, you know, an area that he recruits, they love him up there. I think that he'll do a great job there. A great family, too. Great family. Ricky's going to be missed. I just really like, you know, he and his family, he and his boys do something really neat. They're in the process of doing that. Ricky and I have talked about this for all, because Ricky will come up to me and he'll say, "Hey, you're one of the guys around here I can talk baseball with." They have been in the process as a family, you know, of going to 3-4 major league ballparks a year, with the idea that before the kids get out of high school, they will have visited every ballpark in the majors. These guys have lives too. And I think that. That shows you, you know, the neat kind of family guy he is. And he's going to do well there. He'll do well at Old Dominion. I think it's a great, for a head coach, it's a great starting spot. Yeah, you're going to have, you know, you'll play against a Virginia or Virginia Tech. Man, I think they won, one game this year? So he'll have the ability to go to that job and then put his own imprint there at Old Dominion. Now it opens up the doors of what Penn State does. And it's one thing about James Franklin. He always does have in his back pocket, which he changes all the time, by the way. This is not a constant thing. He's making changes probably every 6 months to the doggone thing. A list of 4 to 5 people at each position that he considers to be people that he's got to keep an eye on in case he has to make a move. So I wouldn't doubt that in a short period of time we hear something as to who the next offensive coordinator will be. Now, we'll have to find out here temporarily who is the offensive coordinator for the bowl game against Memphis. Because let's take this back a little bit. When Penn State played in the Gator Bowl, the Tax Slayer Bowl, the Gator Bowl, Joe Moorhead was named before the bowl game as the offensive coordinator, but Ricky Ronnie is the one that called the game. As you're familiar with the personnel, how you played all year, if you go out, it's for example, if you go outside, you may change some of the terminology. There's a lot that, it's a lot more to it than just, hey, we named somebody, go for it. Sometimes there's a terminology that they want to use or that you want to keep using that they, the coordinator, have to get used to. And we'll see what direction they want to go. I'm not going to sit here and give you a list of candidates. That would be very unfair for me to do something like that. All right. The Patriots filming the Bengals. How desperate do you have to be? Now, I know they're doing, a documentary? Something like that. But
not to be confused with Hard Knocks. That's for sure.
Well, first of all, how many signals are out there now? You can talk to the players directly.
I didn't have anything to do with this.
It's on the Cincinnati. Oh, wait. It was Cincinnati?
You know who's been holding more interviews these days is Bill's son, Steve. Wow. He sounds just like his dad.
Yeah.
Man, that apple didn't fall far from the tree.
Yeah. Belichick did say on WEEI, and he's on there every week, so he gets paid for it, that the video crew in question works on a Patriots web series. That's fine. He says, but he has nothing to do with their projects and has not even seen the video they shoot. He says, our failure to inform the Bengals in the league was an unintended oversight. Crew turned over all the footage to the NFL and cooperated fully when questioned. According to the team, we accept full responsibility for actions of our production crew in the Browns-Bengals game, the Patriots said. So, there you go. It's, to me, it, no offense, it's not a big deal in any way, shape, or form. I really don't care. Because it's the Bengals. But the irony is that it is the Bengals, and you have to ask yourself, on a, quote, cheating scale, why do you need this? Have you looked? I mean, I would sit down and put down a roster of each team and say, you sure you need this tape? But it's a bad look because it's the Patriots and what they've been implicated for in the past. That's what makes it a bad look. It is ironic. Oh, my goodness. The it's interesting how the NBA is now talking a lot about load management. And so players are sitting out. The NHL sits out more players than every other league. The NFL does not sit out players. And it's far more physical than the NBA. It's not as many nights, but far more physical. Major League Baseball. I mean, these guys are playing 120 to 140 games a year. They don't sit out that many games. NHL, same. I mean, the NHL, these are hockey players. They aren't sitting out. And then there's the NBA. And when you look at the NBA, they are sitting out a lot of players. All the time. And I think last year Kawhi Leonard played, 60 games? With the idea they wanted him fresh for the playoffs. I completely get the concept. But if you're going to do it at home games. they get to see the players 41 times a year. Don't go into, or if you're going to a city multiple times, but if you're only going to a city one time the entire season, right, and they paid to see Kawhi Leonard and the Clippers, Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and the Clippers, and it's the only trip they're making into Atlanta this year, don't you feel as a league there's an obligation that they have to play if they're not hurt? And the fans of Atlanta count. Like, for example, when the Penguins make a trip and say he's healthy, they make a trip out west for their one swing through Vancouver, Edmonton, and Calgary. Okay? Isn't there an obligation to play Sidney Crosby in all three of them? Because it's the only time the fans are going to be able to see Sidney Crosby play there all season. Being part of being a star is people are out there to see you. The Heisman finalists were announced. Joe Burrow, Justin Fields, Jalen Hurts, and Chase Young. Okay. Chase Young. I mean, Burrow should win it. There are already actually a lot of votes that have been put in. Great story by John Greenberg in The Athletic. And about playing high school ball. And, of course, he was the backup quarterback most of the time in high school. The guy that was a starter, his family moved, I think, to California. But now in southeastern Ohio, near Athens, where Ohio University is, the local Walmart now sells LSU gear. How about that? They sell LSU gear. And his athleticism down there, while legendary, was not enough to get him to be the starting quarterback. Then he's the starting quarterback his senior year. Lights out, so he goes to Ohio State, and he can't win the job there. You know, I mean, he started from behind there, obviously. I mean, he's going to win it. Does the Heisman still have the same cachet it used to? I think the winner of it does, but the whole ceremony, and they take forever to do it, and it's a TV show, and the whole thing is just, it's become ridiculous. I believe the Home Depot Awards are Thursday night.
Yeah, I'll admit the last five or so plus years, if I would tune into the Heisman, I would wait till like 8:56. Because that's when they just finally get around to it, hoist the trophy up in the air, Chris Fowler gets a couple of questions in, and then nine chances out of ten, then ESPN goes into a debut of like a new 30 and 30 movie or something.
Right, exactly. It's amazing how I thought years ago, this is why I was so wrong, I thought years ago the more that we watched this stuff, the better it would be. And take the Heisman Trophy thing. It's great you can see the announcement live, but they take and they waste an entire hour leading up to it, and it becomes frustrating TV, and it turns out you don't really feel like you want to watch it. At least that's me. We'll take a break. Back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. All right, great to have you with us. Good chance to read the article. You have to have a subscription, but John Greenberg in The Athletic on Joe Burrow. Really good. I know this week, I think I want to see Dane O'Neill, I think tomorrow, from The Athletic. So, but Burrow is the odds-on favorite to win the Heisman. He should be. He's had an incredible year. He is quite a story. And in Athens, Ohio, there are LSU flags and shirts everywhere. They think next year every one of those shirts and flags will be replaced by Cincinnati Bengals gear. I know it's hard for you to comprehend that anybody would wear Bengals stuff. I mean, the only way Sean would do it is if he lost a wager.
Very true. Very, very true.
And it would have to be a significant wager for you
yeah.
to do that.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah.
But right now, he has himself in a position. Because, I mean, Joe Burrow's not just a really good athlete. He just really knows how to play football. And he is fun to watch play football. They even have there's a sign in Athens, beverage drive-thru. Ice, beer, wine, lotto sold here, propane, and then GEAUX, Go Joe. So a little bit of Louisiana in Athens, Ohio. Hey, he's had quite a year. You don't go into Tuscaloosa like he did and play the way he did that night.
It wouldn't have happened if he stayed at Ohio State, that's for sure. But you never know. Another situation could have popped up, another injury away. And
see, part of his problem is that when he finally got going at Ohio State, he hurt his hand. And because he hurt his hand, whatever shot he had to win the job, it's amazing how the stars align in a certain way. Because if he stays there, he's probably the starting quarterback there now, which means Justin Fields isn't there. See how everything lines up? And what does it tell you that three of the four finals for the Heisman Trophy are all transfers? How about that one?
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.